India has been famous for its spiritual teachers, godmen, and incarnations who have traversed the cross-currents of humanity from time immemorial. To the best knows I, this enigmatic face of India has inadvertently presented itself as a land of saffron-clad fakirs, miracle men, and snake charmers. But U.G. Krishnamurti is much more than any of these, or even all of these fascinating characters put together. In our program tonight, U.G., as he is popularly known as, shares his views and concerns on a range of contemporary issues, more as a scholar, philosopher, mystic, who has been globe-trotting for the last 5 decades than as a world teacher. His uppermost concern is the destiny and welfare of humanity as we enter the 21st century.
Human nature is exactly the same. We all speak the same language, whether it is English or any other language. Everybody wants one thing, that is, to be happy without one moment of unhappiness, to have pleasure without pain. It is just impossible to achieve that goal. Unfortunately, the religious teachers from time immemorial have brainwashed us to believe that they have a teaching which will help us to make that possible. They have not succeeded, and we have fallen for that kind of a thing, and we live in hope and die in hope because we still believe that it would be possible for us to have one without the other. I say why it is not possible is because this living organism is involved in that demand to have permanent happiness. See, all sensations are short-lived. Happiness also is one sensation. Pleasure is one sensation. But this living organism is interested in one basic thing, to maintain its sensitivity of the sensory activity and the nervous system. And then alone it can survive and face the rigors of living in these adverse circumstances. We have added one more problem to this living organism, that it is fighting all the time the demand to make that a permanent thing, to be happy forever. It is not possible. Quest for permanent happiness is consuming tremendous amounts of energy. So we are not left with any energy to face these problems of our living. What is it that we can't do in this world? The idea that we should create a heaven on this planet is the one that has turned this extraordinary paradise created by nature into a hellish thing.
The progress of science and technology, notwithstanding, has had a little impact on the masses. U.G. feels that a harmony between man and nature is imperative.
Because we have achieved tremendous things in the field of science. We have put man on the moon. We are going to put man on every planet. That does not mean that what all we have discovered in the laws of nature has not in any way benefited the whole of mankind. It benefits only a negligible percentage of the people. And so what I want to emphasize is, tell the people that it is possible for us to live happily on this planet which nature has created for us. But the problem here is that we have been made to believe that the human species is created for some grander purpose other than all the other species on this planet. That's the first error that the culture has done. And the second thing is that the whole thing is created for the benefit of mankind. So we think that we have a right to enjoy whatever is there in nature for ourselves and deny the basic things for everybody. So there is tremendous amount of things available for everybody on this planet. They say that whatever nature has can feed 12 billion people without the help of modern technology. We have only 5 billion people on this planet. Why there is misery? Why there is starvation? We have to ask these basic questions and we have to get answers. Otherwise, we are heading towards disaster. We are not ready to question the answers. We are not ready to question the solutions that are offered to us to solve the problems. There are actually no problems at all. The problem is that the solutions that have been offered to us are not really the solutions. If they were the solutions, there wouldn't be any problems there at all. So something is wrong somewhere. So it is only on individual level that an individual can begin to look at these things, the absurdity of what we have made of our lives and the world around us, and ask these questions and get answers for ourselves.
The continued dominance of advanced industrialized nations over the world's resources is a concern to many of us. UG finds the inequitable distribution of world economic resources a very disturbing malady in the contemporary economic scene.
The nine industrial nations are controlling the resources of the and the whole world. We have placed them in the seat of power, and we have given them most powerful destructive weapons, and they are going to use them to see that they are not dislodged. So you and I are responsible for the situation there. So we have to stop thinking about what harm or what good religion has done to us. The human thought reached its acme in India. It cannot go beyond. Our country has produced tremendous thinkers, tremendous philosophers.
UG feels that change is the essence of progress. Yet, there is a lot of resistance to change. Why is this irony? He has the answer.
The status quo is there in you. You may talk of all the time that you want a change, but when the time comes for change, you will not let that happen. A change for the better means for your own benefit and for the benefit. That is in the nature of things. Status quo is all that is important to the culture and to the individual. It's like a crab, you know. We are here in this hole. Something happens, it pushes out of this unwillingly, hesitantly, reluctantly. It moves and makes another hole and sits there until something happens and pushes. That's the way we are moving.
Yuji has not much reverence for history when he outlines the distortion and unequal distribution of means for the benefit of mankind. He finds that history has to be corrected.
What is, after all, history? History is the memory of nations, and it is no different from your own memory. That is the most important thing. So we do not want any change there. You may talk of change, change for your own benefit. So change for maintaining the continuity and status quo. All that the human mind has invented is only to maintain its status quo. That is the reason why, when the time comes to change the leadership of the nations, they always pat on their backs and tell themselves that a known friend is better than an unknown enemy, or a known enemy is better than an unknown enemy.
On the vital issue of disarmament and destruction of nuclear weapons, UG says the technology is in the memory and the violence takes roots in the mind. To him, mind is the problem and not the battlefield. Balance of terror is the main cause behind the emerging detente. That's what he feels.
The root of that, all that, building walls, is very important. Every time I pass that red fort, I say to myself, where are those people who built those things to protect themselves? They are gone. And we have survived them all. The time has come for us where the possibility of anybody surviving a nuclear holocaust is slim to none. But are we going to be foolish enough to destroy what we have ourselves created with such a tremendous care? That is anybody's guess. When once you have entrenched yourself and have the means of defend yourself at any cost, what we will do is anybody's guess, you know. I don't think we will be that foolish to destroy everything. The changes in the international sphere, the superpowers have come to realize that if they try to destroy their adversaries, they will also go with them. So the terror that had turned them to look towards trying to live with the adversaries, that kind of a thing has to percolate to the level of the common man. So that is the reason why I maintain that it is not love thy neighbor as thyself, which we have been preaching for centuries, brotherhood, cooperation, and all that kind of a guff and nonsense, but the terror that if I try to destroy my neighbor, I will also go with him. But the basic question is, how are you going to create peace through war?
Training of thought is the essence of a better environment for mankind. UG outlines about the harmony and the delicate balance of nature on the survival of a harmonious human thought.
What is the enemy of man? You see, you are not ready to... I'm not for a moment asking you to discard that. It's a very powerful instrument. So all philosophy does is to sharpen that instrument, you see. That's very necessary. But unfortunately, it is used for purposes for which it is not intended. The quest for happiness, the quest for excellence, the quest for God realization, etc., etc. So, is there any other instrument? You may talk of intuition. No mind state has created tremendous structure of philosophical thought. You know that in the name of void, we have created violence. So, how can violence come out of that peace? Any division that is there, any frontier you create out of the division is one problem that we have to face. So is there any other instrument we have?
Or the division of haves and have-nots for the reason for economic opulence, division and vulgarity and moral decadence, UG has his own perspective.
The have-nots and the haves is operating in you. If you had that, what would you do is anybody's guess.
But if I don't have also.
You don't make a virtue of out of it.
And finally, Krishnamurti has no message for humanity. He has no craze for publicity either. Nor has he any quest to found a school. He does not strive for deliverance of anyone whatsoever, he says. He is not convinced that he has subtle publicity messages to attract the media.
Even if you say things in a negative way, the human mind has this capacity to turn that into a positive thing and feel good.
Why are people talking?
I don't know. I really don't know. I am not conscious of any such thing at all. I really don't know. As a matter of fact, I have been asking myself, don't bother about seeing these religious freaks, religious buffs anymore, these religious seekers. Try and use another medium. And they are asking me, suddenly, why you have gone public? Are you anxious to become famous? No, not at all. The radio and the television are the most powerful medias through which I think I can express myself and talk to the unknown people.
The thought process for many in India and abroad. Well, Mr. Krishnamurti, first of all, we have to analyze the wonderful word called happiness, in quest of which every human species is always in the wrong. Can you tell us what is this happiness?
If you use the word, the quest for happiness, you may not agree with me, but when we use that word happiness, it is no different from any other sensual activity. As a matter of fact, all the experiences, however extraordinary they may be, are in the area of sensuality. That is one major problem that we are facing today. Somewhere along the line, the human species experienced this self-consciousness for the first time.
Yeah.
And it separated the human species from the rest of the species on this planet. I don't even know if there is any such thing as evolution, but we are made to believe that there is such a thing as evolution. But it was at that time the thought took its birth. And thought, in its birth, in its origin, in its content, in its expression, and in its action, is very fascist. When I use the word fascist, I do not use in the political sense, but the one that controls, shapes our thinking and our actions. So it is a very protective mechanism. It has no doubt helped us to be what we are today. It has helped us with the high tech and technology, and it has made our lives very comfortable. And also it has become possible for us to discover the laws of nature. But thought is a very protective mechanism, and it is interested in survival, and that is opposed fundamentally to the functioning of this living organism. We are made to believe that there is such a thing as mind, but that there is no such thing as your mind or my mind. The society or culture or whatever you want to call it has created us all solely and wholly for the main purpose of maintaining its continuity and its status quo. And at the same time, it has also created the idea, given us the idea that there is such a thing as individual. And actually, this is the conflict between the two. And the idea of an individual and the impossibility of functioning as an individual separate from and distinct from the totality of man's thoughts and experiences.
Well, you told us the happiness very much depends upon the thought one gets. Yes, you see, we can do as we think, but who makes us think in a particular way?
Here at this point, I would like to emphasize that the thoughts are not self-generated and spontaneous. I would even go one step further and say, is there any such thing as thought? The very question arises because we assume that there is such a thing as thought, and that we can separate ourselves from thought and look at it. And what we see or look at, what we call thought, is about thought and not thought itself. What is thought? The question arises only because of the assumption that there is such a thing as thought. But we use what we call thought to achieve our goals, spiritual or material goals. Thought to me is a matter, you see. So we may consider the spiritual goals higher, and the culture in which we are functioning places spiritual goals on a higher level than the materialistic goals. The instrument which we are using is matter, and so all our spiritual goals are materialistic in their value. And this is the conflict that is going on there. In this process, the totality of man's experiences created what we call a separate identity and a separate mind. But actually, if you want to experience anything, be it your own body or your own experiences, you have no way of experiencing without the use of the knowledge that is passed on to us. You know? And so, thought, in other words, I would say, is memory. But we have been made to believe that human beings are created for a nobler and grander purpose other than the species on this planet. And it is that is responsible for us to think that the whole thing, the whole creation is created for the benefit of man. So everything that is born out of thought is destructive. And so anything we discover, the laws of nature, or whatever you want to call it, are used by us only for destructive purposes. And it is true that we have discovered quite a few nature's laws. And the theories are constantly changing.
But one thing, cannot at least attempt to make this thought, to refine this thought process, to be constructive, to be positive, at least based on your own experience and experiments.
Thought is not the instrument for achieving anything other than the goals set before us by our culture or society or whatever you want to call it. The basic problem we have to face today is that the cultural input or what society has placed before us as the goal for all of us to reach and attain is the enemy of this living organism. That is the battle that is going on there. Thought can only create problems. It cannot help us to solve any problems.
Then is it desirable to be thoughtless?
What I'm saying is not a thoughtless state. Even the invention of what is called a thoughtless state placed before us as a goal to be reached by many spiritual teachers is created by thought so that it can, pursuing what it calls thoughtless state, and to put itself in a thoughtless state, it is guaranteed that the thought can maintain its own continuity. So whatever we experience in this process of achieving the goal of a thoughtless state, these experiences strengthen and fortify the very thing that we are trying to be free from.
You see, we have this cause and effect theory, the nemesis. As you sow, so you reap. So, don't you think that for every action of ours, whether it's thought or any other action of ours, there is a reaction, if not immediately, at least after some time?
It is the thought that has invented the cause and effect. There may not be any such thing as cause, but every event is an individual, independent event. We link up all those events and try to create the story of our lives. But actually, every event is an independent event. If we accept the fact that every event is an independent event in our lives, it creates a tremendous problem of maintaining what we call the identity. And identity is the most important factor in our lives. And through the constant use of memory, which is also thought, we are able to maintain this identity. So this constant use of memory or identity or whatever you call it is consuming tremendous amount of energy and leaves us with no energy to deal with the problems of our living. And so is there any other way that we can free ourselves from this identity except through the constant use of the identity? So as I said, the thought can only create problems. It cannot help us to solve problems. We are only through dialectical thinking about thinking itself, that's all that is there, sharpening this instrument. All philosophies help us to sharpen this instrument, and that is very essential for us to survive in this world. But it cannot help us the goals that we have placed before ourselves, and the goals are unachievable through the help of this thought. And as you said, the quest for happiness is impossible because there is no such thing as permanent happiness. There are moments of happiness, there are moments of unhappiness. But the demand to be in a permanent state of happiness is the enemy of this body. Because this body is interesting in maintaining its sensitivity of the sensory perceptions and also the sensitivity of the nervous system. That is very essential for the survival of this body. If we use that instrument for achieving the impossible goal of permanent happiness, the sensitivity of this body is destroyed, so it is rejecting all that we are interested in, permanent happiness and permanent pleasure. So we are not going to succeed in that attempt to be in a permanent state of happiness.
Right. The instrument for this thought, you said it is the intellect. But we have to sharpen this intellect.
To survive? Yeah. In this world.
And how to sharpen it? With whose help?
Through a repetitive process, we are sharpening that instrument in the same process of this repetitive thing, we are using tremendous amounts of energy. If it is limited to achieve only what we consider to be materialistic values, to those values, and not use it to achieve our spiritual goals, what is it that is not possible for us to function sanely and intelligently? It does not mean that I am preaching materialistic philosophy or any such thing. This thought is not intended for achieving spiritual goals or even to find out the significance of life, the meaning of life, the purpose of life, or the quest for permanence or the quest for permanent pleasure.
Mr. Krishnamurti, we have been familiar with this theory of birth and death, karma, action, reaction, something we bring along with us as a bank balance, attitude, something like that, and then we spend something and then carry forward to the next birth or whatever it is. How far do you subscribe to this, or you oppose this?
No, I am not opposing the theory of karma or reincarnation. But I am questioning the very foundation of that belief. There is reincarnation for those who believe in reincarnation. There is no reincarnation for those who do not believe in it. But is there any such thing as reincarnation as the laws of nature, like gravity and other laws of nature? My answer would be no. So it doesn't matter whether you believe or not believe in reincarnation. If one is interested in finding out for himself and by himself and resolve this problem of reincarnation, get an answer for this question, oft-repeated question, is there any such thing as reincarnation? You have to ask this fundamental question, what is there now you think will reincarnate? And is there anything there? Is there any such thing as a soul? Is there any such thing as I? Is there any such thing as a psyche? Whatever you see there, whatever you experience there, is created by the knowledge we have of that. So if you see the self, it is created only by the knowledge we have of that self. If you are lucky enough to be freed from the totality of knowledge, not only the knowledge we have of the self, reincarnation, and all kinds of things, then is it possible for you to experience any center, any I, any self, any soul? So to me, the I is nothing but a first person singular pronoun. And I do not see any center, any self there. And so the whole idea of reincarnation is built on the foundation of our belief.
What is it that makes one a great person in due course of time? And what is it that keeps a person stationary, stagnant in his mental process? Do you attribute it to some kind of evolvement or fate or inherent gift? How do you
come? We have always been curious and interested in finding out why a child is born with the deformities. And it was a very interesting theory evolved by the human mind at that time to explain away and give comfort to face the situation that we have in our midst, such people. But now it is possible for us, in the light of what they are doing, the genetic research and microbiology, and correct the deformities created by nature. We attribute it to the nature or to the evils that we collected in our previous life. It is a material and irrelevant. It is now possible, through the help of genetic engineering, to correct even the deformities for which even nature has no way of explaining. Why do we still want to attribute this to something terrible that we did in our previous lives? That kind of a belief comes very handy to us. we have in our midst today a tremendous amount of suffering, tremendous amount of poverty, starvation, degradation. It is very comforting for us to believe that that suffering is there because they did something terrible in their past life. That is no answer to give. That makes us take shelter in that and not do to solve this problem that is very essential for us. It is neither spiritual nor human. See, in the name of doing something human, pure fellow being, we have perpetrated inhuman deeds and maintain the continuity of this. That will only help us to look the other side and not deal with the problem which is demanding the answers from every thinking man in this world today. So,
Mr. Krishnamurti, Mr. J. Krishnamurti, you may remember, he was always emphasizing on one fact that nobody requires a guru. In fact, he would not like to be a guru for anybody. That is what he was claiming, and he was continuously telling till the end. According to you, what is the role of the guru in paving the way for the shishya?
I think that's the wrong word which we use these days for all those spiritual gurus we have in the market, selling shoddy piece of goods and exploiting the gullibility and credulity of the people. A guru is one who tells you to throw away all crutches we have been made to believe are essential for our survival. The guru tells you, throw them away and don't replace them with the fancy crutches or even computerized crutches. You can walk, and if you fall, you will rise and walk. Such is the man who we consider, and even the tradition consider, to be the real guru, and not those who are selling this shoddy piece of goods in the marketplace today. It is a business, it has become a holy business for people. I'm not condemning anything. But as long as you depend upon somebody for solving your problems, so long you remain helpless. And so this is exploited by the people who actually do not have the answers for these problems, but give you some sort of a comforter. And people are satisfied with these comforters and fall for that kind of a thing instead of dealing with the problem for themselves and by themselves.
Mr. Krishnamurti, the spiritualism of the East and the materialism of the West, gradually they are exchanging places now, and they have seen both ends now. What do you suggest as the panacea for the human misery, the deprivation, the kind of suffering everyone in this planet is facing these days, irrespective of their financial position or their other benefits which they are having in this planet? But everyone has got something, one thing, something to seek always, to run after.
As we started this discussion with this, the quest for happiness is all that anybody, whether he's a Russian or an American or an African or Indian, is interested in. But as I said, that it is impossible to achieve that goal because of the physical problem that is involved in achieving that goal. It is assumed that the West is materialistic and that it is looking to the East for spiritual guidance. That is not really true. If you live for a longer period in the West, you will realize that those who are interested in these matters, the spiritual, are not really the people who are guiding the destinies of this world. What is responsible for this sudden interest in these spiritual matters, and they are looking to the East for succor, is the drugs. That gave them a sort of an experience, and they were not satisfied by repeating those experiences. And they were looking around for varieties of religious experiences, whether they go from here, India, or from Japan or China, They are attracted to these things because of the new language and new techniques. The fact of the matter is that when once you have everything that you can reasonably ask for in this world, when all the material needs are taken care of, naturally the question arises, is that all? And once you pose that question to yourself, is that all? We have created a tremendous market for this kind of a business, a holy business, and they are exploiting the gullibility and credulity of people, not helping them to resolve the basic problem, the human problem. It is not that simple. See? So we have to ask questions over and over again. And all the questions that we are asking are born out of the answers we already have. It never occurs to us that why we keep asking the questions when we have the answers given by the sages, saints and saviors of mankind. But we forget to realize that it is the answers that they have given are responsible for the tragedy of mankind. We don't question them. If we question the answers, we would be questioning the teachers. If humanity is to be saved from the chaos of its own making, it has to be freed from the saviors of mankind. That does not mean you will destroy everything, but you will have to ask questions not born out of the answers we already have. But is there any answer? That's all. There it stops, and the solution is there for us.
So the quest continues unabated.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
That was an interview with U.G. Krishnamurti, the thinker on the subject Quest for Happiness. Talking to him was G. Subramanian. This broadcast came to you from the Delhi station of All India Radio.